Alright, this tape is being taped on June the 10th, 1989, and we are interviewing Mrs. Annie
Campbell
Cornell. Okay.
And I'd like for you to try to be as relaxed as possible and forget about that tape recorder. Sometimes I wish I could take them and just make them invisible, because a lot of times people get nervous. Okay, but what I'd like to start off first, Mrs. Cornell, is to get your age and your birthday, where you were born, and a little bit about yourself from that perspective. Where were you born?
I was born in Longview, Texas, mm-hmm. and that's Gray County. That's due north from Houston, out of Kingsville, like directly into Houston, all the way north here. And I was born on the 26th of August, 1917. And my parents' name was John William, my father's name. My mother's name was Alice William. Okay. And we lived on our own farm. My dad was one of the lucky ones. He had a farm of 288-acre farm. We had other peoples working for us. And my dad had six other children when my mom married him. Mm-hmm. And I have three other sisters, and I had two brothers, other than half-brothers and sisters. Mm-hmm. Some have preceded me already in death. Mm-hmm. And I went to school in Longview, high school there, and I was taken out of school at an early age, and I came to South Texas with some white peoples by the name of Frank Ushries, and they had a Dixie iron workshop. And we went to Freer, Texas, and that was a little oil country, mm-hmm. townlies. Mm-hmm. And I lived in the house with them for many years.
What year was that? What year did you come?
That was in the year,
roughly.
I think that was back in the 30s, mm-hmm. something. I don't know exactly, but it was somewhere in the 30s. And she had two children. I read those two boys. Mm-hmm. And I remember in 1938, we motored into San Francisco. And that was my first year of going into San Francisco, California.
With this family you were staying with?
This was the white family that I was living in with. And Mrs. Ushry, she became ill. And the baby, James, was an adopted child. Mm-hmm. And I had to keep him, and I reared him. When the mother returned about a month from the hospital, the baby was calling me Mama.
Really?
And so she liked that. Mm-hmm. And I worked for them for many a year until they moved into Alice. And I didn't want to move into Alice. And so when they left Freer and moved to Alice, I started working for John Turnham. And he had two boys. And I worked for them until I met Johnny Freeland. And we married. And we moved here into Kingsville. Mm-hmm. And I think that was around the year 39. That was in 39. And we rented, I think, for about 2 years. And then we moved our home from Freer into Kingsville, which is the house at 719 West Fordyce, where Robert Lewis lived. I sold that home to Robert Lewis. That was my home that I brought in from Freer, Texas.
You moved it here?
I moved it from Freer, Texas. And then after years, I had three nieces with me. Alice Ruth, Norris Jean, and Teresa. And my mother, Alice William, was with me at that time.
She was all in about 39.
Yeah, she came with me from Freer here, my mother did. And so so did Teresa. And the other kids left and went back to California, everybody except Teresa. And Teresa wanted to remain with me. She had stayed with me from being so little when her mom went to California. And so I kept her. And since I have kept Teresa so long, I have adopted her as my daughter. So now I have Teresa, I have a granddaughter, Valerie, and I have a great-grandson, Robert Earl, in the city of San Francisco, California. And after losing the Freeland, I met Mr. Elmer Campbell, and we married. And we went into grocery store business.
That was in what year, roughly?
That was around 1940. I think that was not 40. I think that was about 42. 44, I started working for the railroad in the shop.
You did?
I did. And because we just didn't have too good a business just going into a little grocery store. And Moore Brothers had a big grocery store here at that time. So we were just trying to feel our way in. So I went to work into the shop, and I worked, and I would get off at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and get my bath, and I'd go in and go in the store. My husband would go in, and he'd go to bed. Then he would go to work at night and get off in the morning.
I wasn't aware that they had
in the shop.
Women working in the shop.
Yeah, it was about 8 or 10 women was employed at the shop at that time.
Doing what kind of work?
Well, we would, some of us would be sweeping, picking up. Some of the women was cleaning the engines, but I was one of the fortunate ones. I was afraid of the engine, and I just told the foreman I wasn't getting on the engine, and therefore I never got on the engine. And I carried mail, and I had to paint. I did a lot of hard work, too, because after a long run, when they started sending the men back from service, they wanted to get rid of the women's out of the shop. And they wasn't supposed to have put us on the main seniority roster. And they went and placed the women's right on the main seniority roster with the men.
Really?
And therefore, we could bump anybody that we were older than they. If a man had a job that I felt I could do, I could bump him, which I did.
Really?
I'd exercise my seniority. And so I started carrying mail. They gave me an easy job. I started carrying mail. And then I worked in the office. And after I worked so long and business got pretty good in our store, Mr. Cameron made me quit.
The shop.
Yeah, I had to quit the shop. And I think I left about two women's over there when I left the shop. I didn't quite get my 10 years. If I had gotten my 10 years, I would have been getting my own pension check from the railroad, but I didn't make it. Therefore, I have to rely on a pension check from my husband. See, I could have gotten his and mine. So after I came in, I didn't just quit. I got a relief of absence. And George Shuford, when he couldn't work, he would have me to come and bump somebody so he could work. He would come to the shop, come to the store, and ask me to come back over in the shop. And I would go back over in the shop, and I would bump certain people then that would be working. And I would work 3 or 4 days so he could work. And that's the way I worked for a while, until my husband just told me I could not work anymore, and I had to just leave the shop.
But that was one way that you helped Mr. Shuford out in his work, bumping the other people.
Oh, yeah.
What was the attitude during that time, having that much power, wielding that much power over men?
Well, they punished us. Wouldn't make our work hard. They wouldn't make I work hard. I remember one time they put me down in the turntable to paint. Mm-hmm. You had to work wherever they tell you to work. Mm-hmm. If you didn't, you had to come home.
Is that, does that mean fired?
Yes, they would fire you if you didn't obey, take orders to work. Mm-hmm. And they put me in the turntable pit to paint, and I did just what they said. And I would just work anywhere they said work. If they said go paint a pole, I'd go paint that pole. And I'd just get that old white stuff and go sling it everywhere they said put it. I'd do it there. And so I stayed there. But I think that's the only thing that black people of today, we have to learn when we're working on somebody else's job. We have to work where they tell us to work. You know, at my age, I learned to do that. And I have accomplished a lot, and I've come a long ways, because after I quit my job in the store, I remember some days I'd work all day, and I'd have $12. When I checked that cash register, it wouldn't be but $12 in that cash register, and that would be hard, you know, after leaving a check that you could draw every 2 weeks. But I said, Lord, I said, I know I'll make it if I just keep going. So I kept on, and so the black people started giving us a little business. Mm-hmm. The Caraways, they came to be good customers. Mm-hmm. I will never forget them, although it would be credit. Mm-hmm. And your dad, he was good. I can't leave the Brooks out. Yeah, he was really good, because after he went into Houston, he would come and get a lot of things from us. He loved the bacon that we had. And he would come back and get that bacon and have us to slice it, and he would take it back to Houston with him. Mm-hmm. And so we had so many more, and Mr. William, Brigman William. We just had a lot of them. I almost forgot all those old Brigmans that we had that did business with Foodway Grocery at that time. And we had a lot of white business. Mm-hmm. You know, one while we had more white trade than we did black trade.
Really?
We sure did. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Hubert, Earl Hubert, was my meat man. Mm-hmm. He had a slaughterhouse right out here with Red.
Out here behind the projects?
Yeah, right out here where the project is. It's kind of in front of the project, man. Wait, kind of on the side. Yeah, it is in the back. Up in the back of it. And the city went that far out, and they made him move that. Mm-hmm. So he put a slaughterhouse way on out across the bypass. Had a real nice place out there, and he worked there for years. And I didn't know how to cut my meat. Mm-hmm. And he taught me how to cut meat. Mm. And I tell you, when I learned how to cut those T-bone steaks, man, I could cut those T-bone steaks. And I will always give him the credit for that. But he taught me how, and then my husband knew how to cut meat, Mr. Cameron knew. Mm-hmm. And he would show me, and he taught me a lot in business, because I didn't know. He married a woman that didn't know any kind of business, didn't have any kind of business trade whatsoever. I was just a labor.
Mm-hmm. Huh? Oh, speaking of yourself, he married you not knowing any business skills.
I didn't have any business qualities at all, but what he knew, he taught me, and then we made it. And the business grew, and the business grew, and some paydays, the business started coming in. I'd take in maybe $300 or $400, and went up to $2,000, just kept going up like that. I said, oh, Lordy. I said, Jesus, I know you would hear us now. And so it just kept growing like that, and so our business just did good in the store. Mm-hmm. And then my husband was laying off. He was kind of sick. Mm-hmm. And they was needing a man to go out. And he was the brakeman. When they needed a man, he would go. And I kept telling him, I said, Mr. Cameron, I said, I just wouldn't go if I don't feel like it. Mm-hmm. He said, oh, well, they need somebody, and I'm going. Mm-hmm. And I done forgot what, who was the train master that day called and wanted him to go. He said, well, Elm, I'd rather take you sick than to take these young ones well because they don't know nothing. So he went on. That very night, he got hurt. That's the night that he got hurt. Mm-hmm. And that next morning when they called me, they just told me he got his toes cut off. You know, I didn't think too much about it at first. I think Woodrun Pettis called me. And he called me Tender, and I called him Tender. Oh, Miss Tender. And he told me that my husband had gotten his toes cut off. And so I said, was it very bad? He said, oh, no, no. They didn't even cut the shoe, just kind of split the sole like that. And well, I got kind of contented, you know. So I worked on it. Something said, call down to Hollingen. Said, call your brother-in-law. So I called Reverend Washington. He worked in the shop there, and he didn't know anything about it. And then when he didn't know nothing about it, that's when I got kind of, you know how you get, you know. And so, he called me back. He said, well, sister, I haven't heard anything. So his sister, Larly, she called me. She said, I've been to the hospital. She said, and they don't have him there. And oh, Lord, what they want to tell me that for? I just broke down. So finally, I called the hospital. I think my doctor sent me some medicine. And I called the hospital. And I asked for the emergency ward. And I got hold to the bone specialist. And he said, are you Mrs. Campbell? And I said, yes, I am. He said, well, I can talk to you. I think some of the family had vexed him or something. Because the way he said, well, I can talk to you. And I said, well, Dr. Harden, I said, I want to know, do you have my husband there? And he said, Elma? I said, yes. And he said, yes, he's here. I said, well, how bad is he? And he said, well, that foot is in pretty bad shape. Said, but other than that, said, he's all right. Said, he just kind of shook up right now. Said, but how soon will you be here? He just kept asking me, how soon could I get there? I said, well, I'll come right on now. I said, I'll get there. I said, I'll be there in the next 2.5 hours, I know. So I just called Papa Goff, and Papa Goff and Mr. Frazier came in the store, and Mr. Frazier was just crying. And that made me cry because Mr. Frazier was crying. And so when Papa Goss came, Mr. Frazier went with me. Spruny, you remember Spruny?
Yes, ma'am, sure.
Well, he went with us. And when we got there, they hadn't brought him down. He was still upstairs. So when they brought him down, they sent us to his room. And we stayed in the room a long time. So Papa Goss said, well, come on, daughter. Said, let's go to the dining room and get something. So by the time we walked to the dining room, they started paging me. And I came back to his room. And when I got to the room, he was just going on. He was just raging. Oh, he was talking about what a poor job of railroading was done that night when he got hurt, you know. And
What was he saying? What was he saying about it being so poor?
He said that they missed throwing the switch. The man on the ground didn't throw the switch, see. And he was up on top of the boxcar. The set the car. And by he just having to look around and see that the man missed the switch, and that made the cars go back together and hit. And the enforcer of those cars hitting together, that knocked him off. And most time when they're on top, it usually knock them down in between there, and the train runs over. But when he seen that he was going to be knocked off, he throwed himself backwards to go outside. And his body went off, but his foot got caught up under there. And so the train master told me, said he was just lucky that he didn't get cut in three pieces. Said most men's up there, usually that's what happened. And that's what he was trying to say. But other than that, we got over that okay. And then they finally had Emma take that leg. And he retired. He had to retire from the railroad.
And what year did he retire?
In 62. 62. It was 62. because we went to California, I think it was in 63. And after he retired, we worked in the store there for a long time, and he kept telling me, let's get out of the store, let's get out of the store. But after he retired, I stayed there a long time until I tried to sell down as much of my merchandise as I could. And but we still, when we left and went to California, we still had quite a bit of merchandise in the store. And Joe Howard, he came in and he sold a lot of stuff. We just give it up. We just didn't much care then.
That was after he got hurt.
Yeah.
And retired.
Yeah, but he did pretty good. And then after he got up, he got a limb. He drove the car. Mm-hmm. He could go anywhere he wanted to. Mm-hmm. He went by himself with that one leg, you mm-hmm. know, with that limb. Mm-hmm. And later he had a stroke. Mm-hmm. And when he had the stroke on his good side, see. Mm-hmm. And it affected that arm. And that really kind of messed him up. But he got up from that. But he just wasn't himself anymore. You know, he just couldn't. When he got where he couldn't drive that car, he just couldn't. Just looked like he wasn't no use. He just felt like he wasn't no use for nobody or nothing. He couldn't go where he wanted to. But we had Breeder. We call him Hucky.
Yes, ma'am.
He was the man, the little young fellow would come around and give him his bath and take care of him and take him ride. And I paid him. The doctor told me to get me a young man to take care of him. Mm-hmm. And I did. And if it hadn't have been for he and my little daughter, I don't know what in the world I would have done. Because I really needed help when he got down. And I was still trying to keep the store open, you know, before we closed that store up. But Breeder was a lot of help for me. And I tell him now, I said, that's why you always getting me. That's why you always owe me all the time. But he is a nice young man. So
did your husband talk much about the railroad and the unions and CT of A and the counterpart?
Yes, my husband, he was a great lover of the railroad and his CT of A. They didn't have a meeting hall. They used to meet at the break at the Masonic Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it's a big two-story building, okay. The Masonic Hall. And so, they have always, he had always wanted a place for the brakemen to meet their own, you know, for their own purpose. And so they had a meeting, and in that meeting, he told the brothers, he said, if you all agree that we should build us a building ourselves, he said, I will give the first $100 on a building. Mm-hmm. And that Sunday, he gave the first $100. Reverend Hall gave his $100. And they took up quite a bit of money that Sunday to pledge, and they made pledges. And that's why they have this little old building over here by Marie Adams. Mm-hmm. They call it the Brakeman's Hall. Mm-hmm. And then that's where they start holding their meetings. Mm-hmm. And they didn't have to pay to go in someone else's building. They had their own building. Mm-hmm. They love their organization. Mm-hmm. And they had black representation. They didn't have white representation.
This is where the CT of A.
That's where the CT of A came in. Mm-hmm. CT of A had the Ladies Auxiliary. Mm-hmm. We stood 100% behind them. Mm-hmm. We worked, and when they needed something, we had money to give them to help do whatever they needed. We have paid for the hall down here.
Really?
And it's in the minutes and everything that what things that we did. Mm-hmm. So I don't think any of the old brakemans or the railroad wives regret nothing, you know, that had been done in the past years that we had to do, although some of it was hard.
Mm-hmm. How did you ladies raise money? What types of things did you do being the ladies auxiliary to help raise funds?
Well, we put on style shows. We could have beautiful style shows. Sometimes we'd have them up in Houston. You see, this ladies auxiliary would extend in Houston and De Quincey. See, we'd even go to De Quincey, and like that, and that just different women would have different plans and just raise money sometimes, bake sales, whatever it would take, we did it. Mm-hmm. And see, they had to have lawyer fees, and we would help them get it. Mm-hmm. And then the men start bickering between themselves, you know.
Arguing between themselves.
Yeah, they couldn't get along. This one wanted, you know, you can't have but one head, one body. Mm-hmm. Well, there's two heads or three heads, things not going to work. Mm-hmm. You got to follow your leader. Mm-hmm. If you got a good leader, you follow that leader. Mm-hmm. Everybody can't lead. We got to have some good followers. Mm-hmm. And so,
that was the problem with the CTV.
That's the problem. Mm-hmm. That was the problem why they went in with the BART. Mm-hmm. The BRAT could have come over with them. They were stronger. Mm-hmm. But when they got the Brakemans, Colored Trainmen of America, divided, that weakened the black men. See, and then they were overpowered, and they had to go over to them. So therefore, when you have strength, you're supposed to keep what you have, but we don't understand that.
When you speak of that division between the two factions, between the CT of A and the BR, is it BRA, B-A-R?
B-A-R-T.
B-A-R-T. Who were some of the people that, and why did the B-A-R-T?
That's a white organization.
Okay. Who helped organize that, and who were some of the black brakemen that wanted to see the colored trainmen fused into that other organization?
You mean they didn't want to follow the black organization? Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Bush was one. Mm-hmm. He fought it, I heard. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them have passed and gone on, so you don't need to call some of the names of some of them, but it's just too bad that...
But they saw that organization doing more for the colored trainmen?
No, because they're still working on the same agreement. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have agreement to do something, why would you, and you're not paying the $350 a month, and you're going to leave your organization to go over to pay $1,450 mm-hmm. a month, mm-hmm. and you're going to be working under the same agreement, you're not getting a better agreement. Mm-hmm. How are you bettering yourself?
Did the men, after they joined, left the CT of A and went to the other organization, did they start to lose some of their bargaining powers?
Oh, they've lost it. Mm-hmm. Did they? They have lost it. Mm-hmm. That's why you don't have no black out there.
Really?
Do you see any black out there much now? Mm-hmm. What do you see out there? Miss King set this railroad up. I have some papers in there. Ooh. That it shall never be... Nothing on this railroad but black brakemen. Never shall be a white brakeman on this railroad. Mm-hmm. But they're running, aren't they? Mm-hmm. If I give you what I have, you're going to take it. Mm-hmm. All right.
Well, tell me a little bit about Mrs. King. Ma'am?
No.
Tell me a little bit about Mrs. King and her insistence on having black brakemen out there working. Was she just a kind, loving person of black people and wanted to see the black man and the black people make it in Kingsville? What motivated her to look out for the blacks?
The way I could see her and understand Miss King, I feel that she was a Christian woman. Mm-hmm. And this being a little place, nobody here, when I first came here, all this was in woods. And peoples was drifting in every day, building in. And she knew one day the town was going to grow. And she was trying to set a foundation for the peoples that didn't know how to set it for themselves. That's the way I feel about it. And then they gave it away. She even said that it would never be liquor here. She didn't even want liquor sold here in this county.
The papers that you hold explaining the agreement, do you recall what year that was? I know the first train ran through Kingsville in 1904. I think July the 4th.
I don't know. I have to look at some of them. I don't know. And you know, let me tell you, the majority of all the history to our railroad now is up in Houston in a museum up there. They came down and got everything that we had up there and put it in a museum up in Houston.
Tell me, Mrs. Carnell, a little bit, go back to your years working in the shop.
Were there just black women working in that shop, or were there black women, Anglos, Hispanics, the whole spectrum?
When they hired women, we were the only women that went out to do the labor work. Mm-hmm. They had a few white in the office, mm-hmm. but we were the only one outside.
Mm-hmm. You spoke of being listed on the seniority roster. Did you have any papers or records of those names? All some of the other women that worked over there with you in the shop. Who were some of those fine people?
We had Emma McWilliam, mm-hmm. Emma Scott, Ada Mae Godley.
Mm-hmm. I'll just put it on pause. Okay, you were sharing with us some of those fine women that worked with you during that time.
I forgot whose name did I stop. Emma McWilliam. Mm-hmm. No, I called her name Emma Scott. Ada Godley. Mm-hmm. I believe Rebecca Summers worked over there for a little bit.
Really?
Not very long, but I think she worked there for a little while and stopped. Mm-hmm. And Rose Rogers. She now lives in Louisiana, some parts of Louisiana.
Okay, that's very good.
And myself, and I just can't think. Uh-huh. The other ladies were some more of them. Some more. Okay. And then we had some sailor women came here and got jobs over there. Uh-huh. The women that was in service. Uh-huh. Sure did. Okay.
Tell me a little bit about your grandparents. Can you remember much about them? Your mother's parents, your father's folks?
No. I don't know anything about my grandmother nor my grandfather. On neither side, no more than what my mother had told me. Mm-hmm. Now, on my mother's side, my grandfather, I should have seen him, but I didn't. Mm-hmm. Because he was a three-quarter Indian. He was flat of hair. Mm-hmm. And my mother was born out in Shelbyville. That's out right on the borderline of Louisiana, that Sabine River, I believe that's the Sabine River, parts Texas and Louisiana. Mm-hmm. And part of our land, that's what we have, part of the river that divides Louisiana and us. Mm-hmm. And my grandfather saw something that happened. I think some man killed another man, and they was in court. And he wouldn't tell the lie that he didn't know what had happened. Mm-hmm. And he liked to ride horses at that time. Mm-hmm. And this man had told him not to tell what he had seen, and he said, "I can't lie." And so one evening he was on his way back home from court. He didn't get to tell it. Mm-hmm. I think they shot him. My mom said they shot him.
Shot your grandfather?
Shot my grandfather. And the horse came home without him, and they knew something had happened. So that's what she tells me about my grandfather.
Now,
and that
him?
Happened in, what year was that she told me? I don't know. It wasn't no way back here.
Who shot him? The law enforcement or the individual that wanted
some of the
lie.
Individuals that did the dirt.
I see.
Mm-hmm. I see. They did the murder in that, mm-hmm. man.
Do you remember, you were saying your grandfather was part Indian.
Mm-hmm.
What
My mother's father.
Your mother's father. What tribe? Do you remember them saying anything about it? What?
No, I don't. I sure don't. Mm-hmm. But I had one of my brothers. He looked kind of like my grandfather. My mom said I had some pictures, and they got burned in we destroyed everything of that in the Bible we had, the old Bible.
Mm-hmm. you were talking earlier, 1939, coming to Kingsville, moving from
Freer,
Texas, to Kingsville. Tell us a little bit. What was Kingsville like during those years, 1939?
When I first came to Kingsville, we didn't have any paved streets, roads, in the streets or nothing. Mm-hmm. Emacho hit my store building. And it was, when I moved down in the 700 block, it was all woods. I had to go and get someone to help me cut that out. It was a lot of holes. We had to fill up a lot of holes and a lot of snakes. And we didn't have water. We didn't have sewage. We didn't have gas. I had to use butane gas. And they finally gave us some water. And it was a long time before we got gas and sewage. We had to have the little outhouses.
The rest of the city did have water.
Part of the city did. Mm-hmm. The white, yeah, some of them did. The main part always going to, you know. Mm-hmm. And up at the store, when it rained, a lot of the salesmen couldn't get to the store. They bogged up. And they just had to come in to the best way they could. Mm-hmm. So I started going into the city commissioner's meeting. And I told them I wanted my street paved. I said, if I don't get but one block, I want it paved. Mm-hmm. And I sit in those meetings every Monday. I would be there. Mm-hmm. When they open, I would be in there. And they'd look over there and they'd see me. They'd say, I know what you want. You want a street in the front of Foodway Grocery? I said, that's right. Mm-hmm. In the front of Foodway Grocery? I said, that's right. Mm-hmm. Well, they did that block. Mm-hmm. And after they did that block, they did this street over here.
Second Street.
But I didn't have nothing but this 500 block first. Believe me, that's all I got. But I got that block. Mm-hmm. And so then we got four dies. Mm-hmm. And then these people started to pave in the streets. Mm-hmm. Started to pave it first.
So you were instrumental in going to City Hall and asking for the streets to be paved.
I had to. I was in business. I had to do something. You know, when you're in business, you have to kind of step out first, you know. And I was, when I was young, I used to be kind of, I didn't mind moving. I didn't mind letting them know when I wanted something, I needed it. I didn't mind asking them and letting them know we was taxpaying citizens down here and we wasn't getting anything, you know.
Did you meet very much opposition? Did you have a lot of people upset with you because here you were black, but a woman on top of that demanding the streets to be paved?
Well, no, they were very nice to me. They told me how I would have to do it. They told me to get the homestead in my block to sign and put up so much money and we could get it, and they did. Mm-hmm. And that's how we got it, because everybody wanted it.
No opposition from the blacks in the community? They stood with you?
Oh, a lot of them, you know, how some going to grumble, but they went ahead. But in the 500 block, they was pretty good. They cooperated pretty well.
What are some of the other businesses that you remember being in the community during those early years, 1939, your first coming here?
Oh, Mo Brothers. Mo Brothers was the business place that I can remember that really did a lot of business with Mo Brothers, because I did business with them before I went in for Mr. Camel, Hill Foodway Grocery. And Nels Moore was really there for the kids when we had Douglas, you know. Had all the kids going to Douglas.
Or any relationship with the Moore Brothers Grocery? The Moore store across from Douglas School and the one that was the big business center. Was there any relationship between who ran those stores?
No. Mm-hmm. No. Different families altogether. But any whatsoever.
Okay. So you had the Moore Brothers and the other Moore family running the other store. What were some of the other businesses?
Oh, and you mean just all businesses?
Yes, ma'am.
And then Mr. Wickham, he had a grocery store. He put a little grocery store in for a while, but he didn't last very long. He didn't have no one to work at his. Mm-hmm. But he would have had good business if he could have had somebody. His wife wouldn't stay in, mm-hmm. like I did. Mm-hmm. But you got to have somebody that'll stay in. Mm-hmm. And then in night cafes or whatever you want to call those places, those hot jumps. Mm-hmm. Now, Mrs. Johnson, Irene Johnson, she had real good business when I first came to Kingsville.
Where was she located? Where was her
right business? Across in the front of Day and Night. Irene Johnson, she had Day and Night. She was the first woman that owned a taxi. She was the one that had the first taxi line in Kingsville. Okay. Irene Johnson, a black woman.
Mm-hmm. First taxi.
That was the first taxi here. Mm-hmm. It was Irene Johnson. Mm-hmm. Okay. And they could have had good business when she left and went to Brownsville and opened up another business and left it with her daughter. Things went, you know. A lot of young people just don't take care of things like the older ones, you know, usually do. And then down in the 400 block, we had another cafe there. What's the name of that one? We was talking about it the other night. Can't think of the name of it right now.
But it was in the 400 block.
Right? Yeah. Right where you ain't live in there.
Brown Derby?
Brown Derby. Yeah, mm-hmm. Brown Derby right in there. Mm-hmm. And the USO, you know. Mm-hmm. And then right across from the USO, we had the Cobbs Cafe, that two-story building over there. Mm-hmm. We had a cafe there. Mm-hmm. And on down further on where Woody Horn lived, when I first came here, they had another cafe over there. It was, what was the name of that one? It was one sitting over on that street up in there.
On 3rd Street?
Mm-hmm. Okay. See, they had USO and they had the Cobb, and then on up further, they had another one.
Okay, further down near the school.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Sure did. Used to be a two-story building sitting back up in that, too, back over in that.
I remember playing in that old building before they finally demolished it. It was just about to fall down. I do recall it standing there.
Uh-huh. And then we had Helen Hodge Beauty Shop and Bobby Shop and Andrews. Andrew had real good business, too, one time.
Is that Dr. Helen Hodge?
Yeah, Dr. Mm-hmm. Helen Hodge.
Mm-hmm. She ran a beauty shop in what?
And a body shop. She had a beauty shop in one side of that building, on the corner there first, mm-hmm. and a body shop in the other side. Mm-hmm. She had good business there.
Oh, I remember the barber shop now.
Yeah.
Right where she has the little duplex.
Yeah,
in
she turned it into a duplex.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, and right up in there is where a lot of the Hodges was born, you know.
Really?
That was the old Hodges homestead up in there somewhere over there. When I first came here, it was a big old house there.
Mm-hmm. We can pause it. What, we look at the black community today, 1989, and we have one lonely business in the community. What happened to the black businesses, in your opinion? Why have we witnessed a decline?
Well, Mr. Brooks, to my opinion, I really think the black just not too industrious or something now. They don't want to work. They'd rather take than work, seem to me. Mm-hmm. Now, when my business was really going real good, I tried to set up Israel Nelson. Mm-hmm. I had one of my salesmen told him that he would stock the store for him, mm-hmm. and he could pay him as he sell the stock. Mm-hmm. Restock it and pay him as he sell the stock. Mm-hmm. And if you couldn't make it with that deal, you can't make it. Because mm-hmm. when I started, I didn't have nobody to do me like that. I had to go to H-E-B sometime. I found stuff was cheaper at H-E-B than I could buy it wholesale because I couldn't buy enough mm-hmm. when I first started. Mm-hmm. But this salesman, through me, he was going to stock this store for this young man. Mm-hmm. And he had children that could work. He had his own help. Mm-hmm. Now, what was keeping him? Mm-hmm. Wasn't nothing. Mm-hmm. And you can make money there. I made it. and I had to hire help. I worked Mexican people. I worked black. I worked them.
So you're saying that basically your feeling is that blacks just, the reason we've witnessed that decline is that blacks don't want to. Yeah, when we started to desegregate and HEB, blacks started to shop and trade in other parts of town, did you see a decline in your business during that time? When they started stepping out, going to places like Beto's and some of these other stores. I don't know if Beto's was even open then. But when they started to, when they were allowed to go and shop in the white stores, did your business suffer from that?
Yeah, the only way that a small community store could make it, you would have to be able to sell on credit as we did. Mm-hmm. And on payday, you see, being a railroad town, mm-hmm. on payday, they'd come in and pay. That's when I would make my money, $2,000 and $3,000 on payday. Well, that'd be big money for me, mm-hmm. a little store. And I was paying as I went. I didn't owe nobody. Mm-hmm. Owned my own building. I didn't owe no rent. Mm-hmm. See, I could make it. But it's hard when you, and I did most of my work. Mm-hmm. But nowadays, I don't know. I don't know what it takes now to do it, but I did lose a lot of my customers, and my husband would go down to HEB's, and he found a lot in there.
Shopping at
HEB's. We redeemed a lady's home, a man and his wife home here. Mm-hmm. And they was trading with us real good. And after he redeemed that home, and we noticed they kind of lightened up, wasn't coming in the store, you know. And so he said, he met her at church over here at King Star. He said, baby, say, what's happening? I haven't been seeing you around the store. Say, I know you're eating. Say, because you're big and fat like that. And everybody laughed, you know. And she said, yes. And they kind of went on off the side, and I was over there with them. Mm-hmm. And she said, yes. She said, but I've been going to HEB's. I find his groceries a little bit cheaper than yours. Mm-hmm. And I done redeemed your home that you can have a shelter over you. Mm-hmm. And you could tell me that? Mm-hmm. See, I wouldn't have had the nerve to say that. Mm-hmm. I would have maybe said I picked up a little something there, a little something somewhere else. But I haven't forgot you or something like that. But I wouldn't have said it like that. Mm-hmm. So we have a long ways to go, but I know the racist that's coming on is not going to be like me, because they the new generations that's coming on, they're not going to be like I were, because I was taught different, and those old mothers and fathers, they made us get up, and we couldn't say what we wanted to do. We had to do what they said to do. But the kids now tell the parents what they want to do, and that they don't want to do, they don't do that.
That brings me to an interesting question. You talk about children, and you talk about the community being tight-knit. I've heard many people say that communities are not like, this community is not like it used to be. If you saw a kid doing something wrong back in those days, you could spank them. You don't see that today. How do you view that whole question of community and the community having a share in raising the children?
Well, that's the law now. They've taken the whipping out of the schools. And so when you move it from the schools and from the homes, you can't even whip your own children now. Mm-hmm. Parents can't even trust out their own children.
Mm-hmm. When you were running your store, children coming in there and acting up.
Spank them
right
there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And some of them would puff up at me, Miss Camel, I'm going to tell my mama. I said, okay, you go ahead, honey, and you tell your mother, because I'd be older than their mother. I said, because when she comes, I'm going to tell her just what I told you. I said, and if she doesn't look right, I'm going to spank her too. And so they'd go on, and most time they wouldn't say anything to their mother. Mm-hmm. See, I'd tell them just like that. They wouldn't say nothing. I'd tell their mother when I'd see them what I had said, and they just laugh. And when the little league ball games was starting up first, and Pawnee League, I had that station wagon, and I had that thing just be full of kids. Mm-hmm. When I closed that store, everybody's kids was coming to me to take them. Mm-hmm. I don't care how I spanked them. They lean on me.
They sure did. You don't find that today.
No, you don't. You sure don't.
What's wrong was the church back then in the community?
We had a real strong church. We really did. And you know, back in that time, the Navy, people said would come in here out of in the Navy. We had some real good spiritual church workers. They was really good. I remember some groups that we had within our choir, because we was in the spiritual chorus at that time, Merle Morris. And had a little group out of ours would come on Monday evening, and some of them was Navy people. And I mean, those people could sing. They would sing. But the churches nowadays is losing. But cause let me tell you back where I came from. I tell them now, they look at me. When a girl would have a baby out of wedlock, you didn't mess around with no more young girls. You went with those married women. I don't care how young you were. Your mother better not see you with that girl, and you better not be playing with that baby like it was a doll like they do now. They take these little babies in and act like they doll. But our parents did not would see us during that when we was coming up.
Well, be a little more specific for me. Playing with them like dolls, you mean?
Just
pampering them?
Yes, that's what
they do. How did they treat the babies back then?
Well, we couldn't have them. The women's had to handle the babies.
I see.
They didn't let the girls, because they'd say you'd get attached to them, you'd be wanting one.
I see.
They wouldn't let you.
I see.
That's what they tell us. Mm-hmm. If you go to messing with that other girl's baby, that'll make you want baby. Mm-hmm. And they wouldn't let you do it. Mm-hmm. So we couldn't do that. We just couldn't do a lot of things. Mm-hmm. I've never seen my mother smoke a cigarette in my life. I've never seen her drink. Mm-hmm. Which she didn't drink.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't smoke. I think she did dip snuff one time when she quit that. But I've never seen her do that.
Who were some of the, when you first moved to Kingsville in 1939, who were some of the more prominent black families in the community?
When I first came to Kingsville.
Some of the names that stood out.
Huh?
Some of the names that just stood out as being prominent black families.
Let me see. Now, for church, now I have to go to church work.
Mm-hmm.
Is that all right?
Sure.
Now for church work.
This is your interview.
Yeah. For church work, Miss Bacon was good.
Uh-huh.
And for community work, Will Thompson was good in his day.
Mm-hmm.
And then Charles Andrews.
Mm-hmm.
Then he got my husband connected up with him with the community action. And then that's how they broke down the segregation.
Mm-hmm.
And then we women broke some of that down. Because, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of the drive-ins you go to, they wouldn't serve you.
Mm-hmm.
And we started just parking our cars up in there.
Really?
Everybody had a car, we'd go get in it and mm-hmm. park, driving up in there, and wouldn't move. If they didn't serve us, we'd sit there.
Really? Here in Kingsville?
In Kingsville.
Mm-hmm.
In Kingsville. But, I don't know. It was a lot of good stirs around here at that time.
Did you, when you did that, park your cars up there, did they come in and hassle you at all?
No, they couldn't say nothing. Sometimes the waitress would come out and tell us, they won't let us serve you. Say, well, if they don't let you, can't serve us, we can sit here until you close. And we sit there.
Uh-huh.
That's what time you close.
Mm-hmm.
11 o'clock, well, we can sit here till 11. We should do it at Helen Drive In. We did it over here at Skeets, and they started serving us. Sure did.
How were the relationships between the blacks and the Hispanics during that period? Between the blacks and the Anglos? But let's start first with the blacks and Hispanics. Mm. Have blacks and the Hispanics always gotten along in Kingsville, or have you witnessed some conflict?
Well, James, to me, when you go to them and tell them what you want, especially those that's in authorities, and let them know you mean what you say, you usually get it.
Mm-hmm.
But the majority of the older people, they'd sit back over here and act like they were satisfied with nothing. If you don't ask for nothing, you don't get nothing. And then when we start going up telling them what we wanted, you know what they said? Thought we were satisfied because we didn't ask for nothing. We told them, no, we wasn't satisfied. We wanted to put that L on there. Or that D. Let them know we wasn't satisfied. And so when Mr. Horn came in and let them know we wasn't getting what we should have been getting, so they found out we wasn't satisfied. Started putting pressure.
Mr. Horn was obviously active. You've mentioned his name a couple of times now, but during the early years, he was active then?
Oh, no, he was on the railroad then.
I see.
No, he wasn't even known. Mm-hmm. Just on the railroad.
Mm-hmm. But you had many, many races coming down to purchase and trade with you in your store, Hispanics, Anglos. Did the people in the community give you any flack over that? Or was that something that they just overlooked and said, okay?
Oh, yeah. Everybody got along lovely. Mm-hmm. Got along lovely. Mm-hmm. It wasn't but one thing that I heard in my store. You know, Charles Andrews was the body shop that had the first television. Mm-hmm. And he had the first segregated body shop, mm-hmm. white and black and anybody. And I overheard a white man come in my store. He was drinking. And he said that we're going to take old Charles Andrews out Monday night and tar and feather him. And he was talking to a bunch of the black men, but they didn't pay him no mind. You know, but I did. Mm-hmm. I was like Mary Magdalene in the Bible. I did. And that was on Sunday morning. I never will forget it. Mm-hmm. And so... he stayed in there, and he stayed in there, and he stayed in there. And that man was Blundy Hollyfield. He drank a lot. He was in the store all the time. Mm-hmm. And he was one of the old-timers. Mm-hmm. He had a body shop, too. Mm-hmm. And they was envying Charles, because Charles was taking in white people from him.
I see.
And so the church went to Robstown, I believe, that Sunday. And I told Al and I told Mr. Campbell, I said, did you all pay attention to Blundy, what he said a while ago? You don't pay no attention to him, he's drinking. I said, well, I do. Mm-hmm. I said, and I'm going to tell Mr. Andrews as soon as I get a chance what he said. Mm-hmm. And I told him when we got to Robstown, he had just bought a new van and he had a bunch of the kids to Robstown. Mm-hmm. And when he got out, and Evelyn was going, she went with him. She wasn't as big like she is now.
His wife.
Mm-hmm. And so I went there and I sit down and I told him, I said, now, Mr. Andrews, I said, I don't know how true this is. I said, but I overheard it. I said, but something about it, I said, I can't keep it to myself and not tell you. Mm-hmm. I said, because if something happened to you, I said, I couldn't live. I couldn't live over it. Mm-hmm. And I told him what I had heard. And he said it was true. They was intending to do that. He said they was intending to do that. Mm-hmm. And I think he called somebody from out at King Ranch, and they got business on those white people out there. But I don't think the white people in Kingsville ever wanted any kind of stuff like that here. Mm-hmm. I don't think they did. Mm-hmm. Because we have never had any trouble. We have always, you know, I don't know when... like I said with Earl Hubert, they had me call me up unannounced to me when he retired. I had to get up and talk. Mm-hmm. I said, we have always been like sisters and brothers with different color of skin. Mm-hmm. So I've had a lot of people in my store. I've cooked and they go back in the kitchen and eat just like everybody with the same color. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I just like I said, when you ask for what you want, you get it. Mm-hmm. But if you don't ask, you don't get nothing.
Mm-hmm. What about Klan? Did Kingsville have a Ku Klux Klan, or to your knowledge? You ever stuck? Sure, no problem. Perfect.
Yes, Because I think in every town they have them.
They have.
Yes, I believe so. I really do. I believe in every town, I believe they have it. I believe they have it just like we have the NAACP. I believe they have the Ku Klux Klan. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I first came here a long time ago, it used to be a big old house that I hear on this farm road going out by Maple Circus. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you all remember that old big house sitting back there.
Behind the cemetery?
No, not that far on the farm road. This way you turn and make that cut off.
Yes.
Now,
yes.
It used to be a big house sitting right over on that corner there. Mm-hmm. Great big old house. I passed that one afternoon kind of late, and I saw some hoods in there. Mm-hmm. I saw them with my own eyes. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if they was Kingsville people or who people, but...
This was about what year? Was this while you had the store going or before you opened your store, your business?
I wasn't even...